So first of all, happy Hanukkah and a guten Chodesh. I knew we would be a challenging weekend because, you know, it's Hanukkah, it's vacation time, you know, it's a national holiday. When I saw it snowing last night, I figured we'd really have problems, but at least we didn't have any snow issues. We had been talking about Shimi ben Gera and the approach of the majority of Rishonim. We will later get to the dissenting opinion, but the approach of the majority of the Rishonim was that Shimi ben Gera, in essence, was really Chayav Misa for cursing David HaMelech. David HaMelech himself had promised not to do anything, but that was a promise that was sort of extracted under coercion, because Shimi ben Gera made it his business to be the first person to welcome David when he was coming back to Yerushalayim, and David understood that if he rejected Shimi ben Gera, others would be reluctant to follow him. He needed to regain the loyalty of the people, so he had no choice but to accept Shimi ben Gera, but he didn't really forgive him. He only promised that he himself would not take action against him. Therefore, he's instructing Shlomo to do so. However, if Shlomo were to simply go ahead and get rid of Shimi ben Gera immediately, that would still not be proper. Perhaps al pidin it would be technically justified, but it wouldn't look right, because it would seem as if it was really David getting rid of him. Therefore, he instructs Shlomo HaMelech to find some excuse, to set up some kind of situation where you'll be able to get him. And therefore, the instructions that Shlomo is going to give Shimi ben Gera later, which essentially are not to leave Yerushalayim, were simply a setup. There was no real justification for such a order, but it was necessary to set Shimi up in the hopes that he was violated, which is, of course, what happened. We mentioned that the reason why Shlomo is allowed to take action, even though Moed v'Malchus does not pass on to the son, to the next generation, was because the curse of Shimi ben Gera was directed against Shlomo as well, at least in part, because he accused David of being not Roy to the throne because he was a Moabi, and he accused him of being a Noaif, which would certainly cast aspersions on Shlomo HaMelech, who was born from Bathsheba. So therefore, it was a challenge to Shlomo HaMelech as well. We're up to Pasuk Tes, Perek Beis Pasuk Tes. The Atah, and now, Al Tinakehu, do not let him go off free. The expression of Atah, and now, the Kliyoker makes a comment that normally it's appropriate for a son to follow the behaviors of his father, obviously assuming that the father's behaviors are kosher. But normally it's appropriate for the son to follow the behaviors of the father. So if Shlomo would have done that, Shlomo would have forgiven Shimi ben Gera, just as his father did. Therefore, David HaMelech is saying, no, V'atah, now, beginning with now, in other words, don't continue the hanhaga that I have done. Rather, institute a new way of behavior and be tough on Shimi ben Gera. I had my reasons, but they don't apply to you, and therefore you should not follow in the footsteps. This implication, by the way, to do what the father did, we sometimes make fun of it. I know that this is, there was a fellow who used to daven in my father's shul, who used to say Yalla v'yava on Shabbos. And the fact that there was not a single sitter in existence that had Yalla v'yava for Shabbos did not deter him. He insisted that his father said Yalla v'yava on Shabbos. Presumably, now, he was a survivor of the Holocaust. He was separated from his father probably around the age of 9 or 10. Presumably, what happened was, when he was a child, probably didn't go to shul that often as a young child, and one day his father took him to shul, it was Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, and when he was about to say Shemoneh Esrei, the father said, Shei Yalla V'yavo. But he didn't tell him why. The kid didn't realize it was Rosh Chodesh, and this stuck in his head that he says Yalla V'yavo on Shabbos. So his whole life, he was saying Yalla V'yavo on Shabbos, there was nobody who could dissuade him. So we make fun of these types of things, but the truth of the matter is, there's a very powerful, positive, underlying attitude behind that. Obviously, there are times when you don't follow what your father did, and it requires understanding. But the idea to follow what my father did is a tremendous protector of the Mesorah. We find, for example, that when there was a hunger in Eretz Canaan at the time of Yitzchak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Yitzchak and said, "I'll Tered Mitzrayim, don't go down to Egypt." And we know Chazal tell us that Yitzchak had the din of a carbon because he was brought on the Mizbeach for the Akedah, and a carbon isn't supposed to leave Eretz Yisrael. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, "Don't go to Mitzrayim." Why was Yitzchak going to go to Mitzrayim? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to intervene? That's because when there was a hunger, Avram went to Mitzrayim. Is there a mitzvah to go to Mitzrayim in the hunger? Maybe go to Aram. Maybe go someplace else. But that's what my father did. I'm going to do the same thing. Except that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, in this case it shouldn't apply. We find that the Pasuk tells us and makes a point of saying that when Yitzhak opened up the wells that had been stuffed up by the Plishtim, these are wells that Avram, his father, had dug, Vayikalim Shemos, he called them by the names that his father called them. The Rabbeinu Bechaya in that Pasuk says there is no such mitzvah, there is no significance to it. There is no real reason to do it. The reason why Yitzhak did it is Kibud Avraham, to follow the footsteps of his father. And if there's nothing wrong with calling it the same name, then I'm going to call it the same name. And he says this is a great gather, a protection, that you follow in the father's footsteps when it comes to Midos Tovos, Hanhagos, and Mitzvos as well. When you have the attitude that I don't change what my father did unless there's a compelling reason. But if the situation was purely reshus, there's no reason why I have to call it the same names, and I'm sure Avram wouldn't have been insulted in any way, not a pagam on his covered, but there's no reason not to call it the same name, then I'm going to do it the same as my father did.
Does this apply more to a Rebbe
today? It applies, well, again, you know, I don't want to get involved in family situations. Very often today, you know, sometimes the children either are or think they are firmer than the parents. I'm not sure always which one it is, but it applies to perhaps a Rebbe as well, but I wouldn't exclude it from applying to a father, depending. Obviously, if a person's father isn't so firm and the child is firm, it may be a different situation. But where there isn't...
The main source of Mesorah for a child is to teach a child, and
yeah.
Now...
Yeah, no, a Rebbe might be a source of Mesorah as much or more than a father, but that doesn't preclude or exclude the father as well. When it gets into the Shayas and Minhagim and so on, I'm not going to get involved in that. The point here is that to follow the Mesorah, or to follow even what your father does or your Rebbe does, even where there is no real meaning to it, but there's nothing wrong with it, is a positive thing. Certainly where there's reason to assume that there might have been a reason for it. So had David not given instructions to Shlomo, one would have assumed that Shlomo would have forgiven Shimi ben Gera simply because his father did. And therefore David is telling him, don't do that in this case, I had my reasons, but now you have to be knowing in a different way. The pasuk continues, Al tenakehu, do not find him innocent, ki ish chachamata, because you are a wise person, the yadat es asher tassel, you will know what you need to do, for arata seveso bedam sha'ol, you bring his old age down in blood to the grave, that you should die a violent death. The yadat es asher tassel, according to, again, the majority opinion, is find some way to set him up so that you'll be able to justify taking action against him. But the real reason you're taking action against him is his previous curse. But you need some cover story, so to speak, so it shouldn't appear as if it's David who's doing it and not Shlomo. The Abarbanel objects to this approach, and the Abarbanel says that if, bottom line, if David Hamela, if Shlomo is killing Shimi Megara because of David Hamela's instructions, he says that would be a violation of David's Shvua. When David makes a Shvua that I am not going to kill you, that includes I'm not going to instruct somebody else to kill you. But if David would have sent Yoav, let's say, to kill Shimon Gera, he can't say, hey, I promise I won't kill you. I didn't say Yoav wouldn't kill you. Right? If you're instructing them to kill you, then it's your action. And even if the action takes place after your death, if it takes place based on your instructions, then the fact of the matter is that you have done it. People can affect and take actions after their death as well. It actually reminds me of a story. There's told the story of a certain town, Moser, in Russia, who used to turn in Jews to the secular authorities in Europe. That was not such a simple thing either, because it wasn't as if you were treated fairly. And he was a dangerous person, a very much hated person. And eventually, like everybody else, he passed away. And he left instructions at Tzavah that he should be buried face down. Right, that's contrary to halacha. Nifter is buried face up. But the Chevra Kedisha was inclined to listen to him. Why not? Such a Russia, let's do it. But they asked the Rav. And the Rav said, absolutely not. He said, you don't follow his instructions. It's contrary to halacha. I don't care what kind of person he was. He should be buried face up, like everybody else. So they did. A day or two after the funeral, a troop of soldiers appears in the cemetery, and they're digging up his grave. They open up the grave, take a look inside, close the grave up, and go away. They later found out what happened was, this Moser left a note to the local authorities, who he was close with, the mayor, and said, these Jews are so anti the government, and they hate you so much, since I'm a friend of yours, I've heard reports, they intend to insult me by burying me up face down, contrary to everyone else, and you'll see what rebels they are. So they went and investigated, but he was buried face up. So this guy was trying to make trouble after his death as well. The fact of the matter is, says the Abarbanel, and it is quite a compelling argument, that if David instructs Shlomo to do it, then Mechora, that's really a violation of the Shvua. That's what the Abarbanel claims. Therefore, he says, and again, the words of the Pasuk are a little bit difficult to read this way, but he says that that was not David's instructions. His instructions were, listen, Shimi ben Gera is a dangerous person, and don't think I forgave him because I wanted to forgive him the same as everyone else learns. I forgave him because I had no choice. He politically forced me to do so. And you shouldn't follow my ways. Al-Tanakeu means do not find him innocent if he should do something wrong. I have forgiven him for what he did wrong because I had to. But you shouldn't do the same thing. Al-Tanakeu kish chachamata, you're a wise person. You should understand that if he does anything wrong, it's going to be dangerous. And you will know in the event that he violates something that you should bring him into the grave in blood. So you shouldn't let him go out free if he does something wrong. According to the Abarbanel, you have to say that the instructions that Shlomo gave Shimi ben Gera were independently justified. And the Abarbanel explains it. He says the instructions he gave Shimi ben Gera was to stay in Yerushalayim. Why? So I have a real rationale for that. Shimi ben Gera was a political opponent of David HaMelech. And the curse that he cursed David HaMelech indicated that he still supported the family of Shaul. So if he were to hang out with his friends, with the people from Binyamin, his friends, there's always the possibility that he could start up a conspiracy against the throne. So I have the right as a king to say, I want to keep you here in Yerushalayim under my nose, where you don't have your connections, where you don't have your political allies, where you can't make trouble for me. And I'm commanding you not to leave Yerushalayim, because if you do, I have the right to be suspicious of you fomenting trouble. So therefore, Shlomo's instructions to Shimi ben Gera were justified politically. They were done with his chachma, but they were not merely a setup to try to get Shimi ben Gera into trouble. All right, the pasuk continues, so that's pasuk tes. So the pasuk continues. This was the final instruction of David HaMelech, and then shortly thereafter, Vayishkav David im Avosav. David slept or rested with his fathers, which of course means that he passed away. Vayikaver beir David. He was buried in Ir David. The Ralbag says that this expression Vayishkav im Avosav is used when the person passing away is a tzaddik ben tzaddik. In other words, when David was a tzaddik and his father was also a tzaddik, so it's Vayishkav im Avosav. He's sleeping in the same place, meaning he's in Gan Eden together with his father. If his father were not a tzaddik, we wouldn't say this, because he's not really Vayishkav im Avosav. His father might be one place, he might be someplace else, and of course, conversely, could be true as well. So Vayishkav im Avosav. Incidentally, this is a remez to the Olam HaNeshamos, to the idea that after a person dies, his neshama goes up to Shemayim, and there's a Gan Eden, there's a Gehenim, there's different places that he could go, he could be judged, which of course is one of the Ikrei Emunah, brought down in the Rambam's Ani Mamins. Yet you do not find it explicitly any place in the Torah. There are remazim, there are hints to it, and we find references to it in Navi that perhaps are a little bit more explicit, but you do not find any explicit reference to the Olam HaNeshamos, to the afterlife, in the Torah itself. And the Chazal darshan it, and a number of hints and drushes and so on. I'm not saying that you don't have sources, but it seems a bit strange that one of the great Ikari Amuna, such a fundamental thing, is only mentioned Derech Remez, Derech Drasha. Why is it so important? It really is important because otherwise there's no way of justifying, so to speak, the actions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This world is not a place of justice. Sometimes it is, but often it's not. Right? We find Tzadik Viralo, right? We have Tzadikim who have difficult lives, Rasha V'Tovlo, Rishon who have easy lives, we find great things that cannot possibly be explained or understood by us, except for the fact that this world is simply an introduction to a greater world. And this is, the warm-up zone. This is the vestibule, right, as the Chazal compare it. And everything gets straightened out in the end. And the Mesiv Sushram said it as eloquently as anybody else. He says that the Tirba Emes, you see in truth, Shekvar lo yuchal shum ba seichel lahamin, no one with seichel could believe, Shetachlis b'riyas adam l'matzobu b'olam hazeh, that the purpose of man's creation is for his state in this world. What is man's life after all in this world? Who is truly happy and at peace in this world? Who has a lifetime of peace in this world? Our lifespan is 70 years. If you're stronger, it's 80 years. And even the best of those years are full of work and frustration. How many different kinds of pain and diseases and aches and worries? So Acher calls all some of us, and then you get to look forward to your death. Echad mini elef lo yimatzeh. You will not find one in a thousand. Sheyar ba'olam lo hanos v'shalva mitis. That the world gives him a great deal of pleasure and true peace. So gam hu, and even that one person, ilu yagia lemei shan, if he lives to be 100 years old, he's already gone from the world. When he's an old man, he can't appreciate it anymore. Alright, then it gets into another argument. But clearly, life in this world, if this were the ultimate tachlis and toelis, it would be a sad story, and it wouldn't really be able to justify the whole Bria and the whole Torah. So it's a fundamental part of our Emunah, it's a fundamental part of the whole system of Torah. Yet, it's only mentioned through Ramazan. This is one of those questions in which the question might be stronger than the answer, but I'll share with you one answer that I did see, at least to some extent, is that we human beings have a tremendous tendency to procrastinate. And Chazal are full of azharas, of warnings, that remember, this is the world where you have to take action. This is where you make things happen. And if you go, once you're in the next world, it's too late. Hayom lasoso v'ein l'macha lasoso. Today is the time that you need to do things to determine mitzvahs, and not tomorrow. And if you delay until tomorrow, it's too late. If the Torah would talk openly about Olam Haba, about the next world, about life after death, human beings will have a tendency to say, hey, you know, there's another world there, so I don't do so well in this world, I'll do well in the next world. So to deliver that message very powerfully, the Torah doesn't really even mention the next world. This is it. Not that this is it in terms of schar va'onesh, but this is it in terms of ma'asim, of what you can do. And if you don't take care of it now, in chokhman and eitzav and tzu, there's nothing you can do after your life is gone, except maybe come back to earth again. There's such a concept as well. So therefore, perhaps that's an explanation why this Iker is only mentioned Derech Remiza, and amongst the hints, this is one of them. This expression of Yishka Davin Imavasa. There is a interesting Gemara. It talks about the death of David in reference to the pasuk Tov Kelav Chai Maryameis. A live dog is better than a dead lion. As we know, David HaMelech passed away on Shabbos. he was learning. We're familiar with the story, and the Malacham Avos couldn't get him, so he made a tree crash outside, and David walked out to see what was doing, but he was still learning. People sometimes think the tree crash distracted him, not enough to stop his learning. But he started walking out, and the step that he stepped on to go down broke under him, and as he fell, that's what distracted him, stopped him from learning, and then the Malacham Avos got him. But now they had a problem. David's body was lying outside, and it was a hot day, and the sun will cause the body to decompose. So, but a dead person is muksa, cannot be moved on Shabbos. They wanted to move him into the shade. So they came and asked the question to the Sanhedrin, David is lying in the sun, what can we do? So there's a halacha for a mace. What you can do is you could take a kikar tinuk, a loaf of bread or a little baby, and put him on top of the nifter, and then you can move the whole the nifter agav the kikar or tinak. So here you see David HaMelech, the great Aryeh, the great tzaddik, the melech of Kal Yisrael. Nothing you can do to move him, a little baby, and now we can move him. So tov kelev chayim Aryeh meis. That's what the Gemara says. Just as an aside, I found it interesting. I don't know if there's any great moral lesson to it, but not everything has to have one. But there's a halachic issue here. There is a Shita Rishonim, the Mordechai, that holds that you can move a dead body because of its clothing. Because the clothes are not muksa, and therefore just as you can move it agav kikar, agav tinok, you can move it agav the clothing as well. The obvious question under Mordechai is the story of David HaMelech. David HaMelech was in the middle of learning, walked outside and died. Obviously he was fully dressed, and he was wearing clothing. So why in the world did they need a kikar atinuk by David HaMelech according to the Mordechai? According to the Mordechai, the clothing also serves the same function. So you could have a sick person lying in bed, maybe he's not wearing clothing. Such a situation could arise, but that wasn't the case with David HaMelech. So then why couldn't they move Agav's clothing? And both, let me see who it is, I believe it was the Magen Avraham and the Taz, both give the same answer. They say that that's true by a regular person. But a king, anything that's used by the king cannot be used by anybody else. Therefore, the clothing of a king are muksa. So once a king is dead. So a regular person, the clothing could be used as a substitute for kikar tinuk because the clothing is not muksa. But the king, the clothing of David HaMelech would be muksa, and therefore it does not serve that function, and that's why they still needed kikar tinuk. Incidentally, another side point that we see, historical reference, is that we know that the laws of muksa are derabbanan. They're of rabbinic origin. It appears that they were already in place at the time of David HaMelech. Many of the takanos derabbanan didn't take place until later, but there were some that go back historically quite a long time ago, and apparently muksa is one of them. So therefore it was necessary to find a kikar or tina. We'll stop here, I think.